Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome, 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 and a welcome again to the Triple Threat Podcast. I am DJ Shockley, and my man Scotty D is alongside with me today. Appreciate you joining us here on the Triple Threat Podcast. We got a really, really good guest today joining us here on the Triple Threat Podcast. My man, Big Play Ray Buchanan, is going to stop through and holler at us for a little bit, and I'm going to pick his brain a little bit, Scotty D, about a couple things, man. But first off, how you doing, bro? What's new with you this week? What's poppin'?
What's up, DJ? How are you, man? We are getting ready. We're down to two games. We got one football game left this year, DJ.
Man,
it's crazy. So sad.
I mean, you know what? That's interesting you bring that up, because I was thinking just the other day, I was like, I didn't even think we was going to have a season this year. Now we're down to the last football game of the season, which is the biggest of them all, which is obviously the Super Bowl coming up here next week, next weekend, with the Kansas City Chiefs taking on Tom Brady and his freaking 10th time going to the Super Bowl.
Insane.
That's unbelievable, man. Un-freaking-believable that that's happening. First off, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, so we're going to talk about it. What did you think of the conference championship games?
They were fun. I couldn't believe that Tom Brady kept making those mistakes and the Packers couldn't capitalize and get that lead.
Now, granted,
they got in a hole early, but I just figure anytime you're going to tell me any quarterback, Tom Brady or anybody, going to throw three picks, it's lights out, I would think. But
no doubt.
That was a good game. And the Chiefs Bills, man, that was fun. I feel like it was a little closer than the score said, but I think most people thought that outcome was going to happen. The Chiefs are just a little bit above the Bills, and it looks like they're round. You know, they're coming in at the right time. They're peaking at the right time, I think, man.
And that's kind of similar to what happened to them last year. They peaked in the playoffs. They were down in most of their playoff games. They end up coming back and winning. Patrick Mahomes being himself, making plays all over the field, but they got so many weapons, man. It's hard to stop that team. I mean, you know, we ain't going to dive too much into it, because obviously we'll talk about it more next week. But the way that they can get people open, the way they create explosive plays, they're out there underhand throwing the football for touchdowns to Travis Kelce on that little shovel pass every single week, and it's working. This is going to be a fun game. But Tom Brady, 10th Super Bowl. I'll be honest. I thought this was going to be Green Bay, no doubt about it. Yeah, Tampa had been playing well, but I was like, that man Aaron Rodgers is playing at a new level. Now he got a chance to take out Brady. And I was like, oh, Tampa will be back next year, you know, once they find the groove. But Tampa's in the freaking Super Bowl. Think about it. Last year, where they were. They haven't been in the playoffs in the last 13 years. And now Tom Brady comes in his first year, take him to the Super Bowl. Come on, man. You can't even write this if you're Tom Brady.
It just tells you how good a competent quarterback is. And I'm not trying to bash on Jameis Winston too much, but he's a Seminole and I like the Gators. But
no, it's easy. Look at the difference.
But because he had tools. Yeah, he had tools. They had Godwin and Evans, who are two of they might be the best 1-2 punch in the game. Obviously being here in Atlanta, we got Julio and Ridley, but Julio sometimes struggles to stay on the field.
Right.
But I think as far as physical and they're two of the best receivers in the league. So he walked into that. He never had a combo of receivers like that ever.
True.
He had Randy Moss for 2 or 3 years. Besides that, it was a bunch of little guys that Brady just wheeled the ball to him. So, you know, I really like Ronald Jones, the running back, and picking up Fournette, man.
Yeah.
I mean, early on, I thought they're just taking a flyer on him, but that's worked out. That's a nice 1-2 punch as well. So it's, they're legit for sure, we'll see. We'll see if they can do it. But man, Tom Brady, 10 Super Bowls in what, 20 years? 21 years? That's insane. Let me ask you a question about the other side of that game.
Unbelievable.
Aaron Rodgers is 1-3 in NFC Championship games.
We 1-4.
1-4. Okay, he's 1-3 going in.
Yeah.
What? You know who else has one NFC championship win?
Who?
Matt Ryan. Jared Goff. Who else? There's others. I hadn't thought about this too much, but it.
But you've been there as many times as Rodgers did. You expect him,
yeah,
to win more than that.
What's your take on that?
I think it's going to be something that's talked about because
is the shine come off a little bit when you start thinking about that?
I think it's only brought up if somebody talks about it. Because at the end of the day, people are going to think about how good Aaron Rodgers has been over his career.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this season he didn't get what he wanted. They drafted a guy that's going to replace him. And he just goes out and I think we all can agree he's going to be the MVP. But the fact that he's 1-4 in those championship games, it tells you something. Now, in this ball game, he had opportunities. You mentioned it. He had a bunch of opportunities when Brady throws three interceptions, and I think he only gets 6 points off of it. Like, mm-hmm. you got to capitalize on that. Obviously, all the talk this past week was about Matt LaFleur not going for it on, you know, fourth and goal from 7 or 8 yard line. You got Aaron Rodgers, and you kick the field goal. I know that's a big part of the conversation as well. Give that dude a chance. Get 12 a chance. I feel that. I'm with him. But obviously going 1-4 in those championship games, that's going to be something that's talked about. That's going to be something that's looked at unless he goes out and wins another Super Bowl that people won't remember it. But he's been there. He's had chances and he's 37 years old now. I mean, so we'll see how long he can last.
So I figured it out. When on Sunday, I tweeted that Tom Brady has won as many NFC championship games as Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Jared Goff. That's like who's winning all these NFC championship games? Who's Colin Kaepernick? Yeah. Colin Kaepernick's got one.
Yeah. It's been moved around a little bit.
I mean, and all those guys, they didn't have to face. I mean, they're younger, but they didn't have to face Tom Brady or Peyton Manning in any of those games.
Yeah.
Drew Brees, Saints can't even get to the NFC Championship game.
Well, they've gotten there. They've gotten there the two previous years, remember, and had, you know, the stuff happened with the Vikings. And
oh, you're right. They get there, but they lose. Yeah. So Drew Brees has a bad record.
And then they had the thing happen a year before with the Rams, where the bad call on the pass interference. So those are 2 years where, you know, they should have won the ball game. You know,
should have, could have.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I just wonder. That's, you know, the shine. Matt LaFleur's call to kick the field goal. I have a hard time. I can see how a lot of people are going to give him a hard time on that. But it's what if it works out? What if they do get a stop? The Bucs hadn't just run up and down the field in the second half. They scored most of their points in the first half. I mean, what if it works out? That's. I don't like those kind of discussions about a call. I don't think it was a stupid call.
Yeah.
I think it was, if I give it a percentage, I don't think it's a 50-50 decision. I think it's a 70% you go for it, 30% you kick a field goal, if that makes sense.
Well, here's my thinking on it. If you go for it and you don't get it, they have the ball on the 8-yard line and you still have the same timeouts. Yeah. You still have the 2 minute there. I mean, you still have all that stuff and they're backed up even more. So now if you do get a stop, then guess what? You may have, you know, you get the ball on your, you know, plus 40 or whatever it is, and you got a chance to go down and score. So I think you can play devil's advocate on both sides for sure.
Yeah.
And obviously hindsight's 2020. And I know he's sticking to his guns about what happened, but
the last thing, the last thing I'll say briefly was the play before that. How does a player like Aaron Rodgers not see a wide open field in front of him and he throws back into double coverage?
Yeah.
Like bad double coverage. He threw it to – it was Adams, I think. He threw it to a guy that was standing still on the goal line. One defender was standing next to him already and another one was closing on him.
Yeah
when he could have ran. That's a bigger failure than the play call on the next play was. But
if you go back and watch it, though, Rodgers is not even looking. He's looking back to his left.
Yeah.
He's never even looking out to his right. Like, I know Rodgers is a really good player, but I think at that point he was locked in on Davante Adams trying to get him in football. So,
and I want my quarterback to think throw first, no question. Yeah. But that's fair, and I'll take your word for that as the quarterback here in the room.
So I think, man, I think interesting ball game. We'll dive into it more next week and get into the Super Bowl and see who's going to win that ball game and, you know, get some pros and cons to that ball game. Some other news around college football. Tennessee hires their new head coach in Josh Heupel, who comes from Central Florida. And Bill Martin, their newly appointed athletic director, came from UCF. So, hey, there's the ties you have with that. Northwestern. Pat Fitzgerald gets a 10-year deal through the 2031 season. Now, he was the winningest coach in team history at 106-81 in 15 seasons. He was a Big Ten Coach of the Year this year. I think everybody remembers Northwestern in that game versus Ohio State. Played him really tough. So Northwestern gets their coach for a long time. Scotty, what do you think about Josh Heupel and his Tennessee hire?
I don't know who they were else they would get to get that take that job.
Yeah,
I mean it's a hot steamy mess in Knoxville, and I have a lot of friends at Tennessee, you know, that are Tennessee fans, and we've had a few decades going back and forth, and we have a good time, you know, giving it to each other, but. Man, it is just steamy garbage up there. Yeah. Just the whole situation. I like Danny White. I'm not an athletic director expert or anything like that. But I don't know if you know who people know who his family is. But his first of all, his brother is the head basketball coach at Florida. Mm. His sister, I think, is she's in administration somewhere. And his dad is the AD at Duke. He was at West Virginia before. He's got athletic director genes for sure. Yeah. So I think if there's a right person to be there, he can't be far from it. I don't know. I'll tell you this, Josh Heupel, UCF has dipped a little bit since Scott Frost left. Mm-hmm. Now, part of that, my belief is that a school like UCF isn't going to maintain a top 10 type program. It's just not viable, I don't believe. But that's got to be looked at. But like I said, man, who was desirable that wanted it?
Yeah, I think it was a safe hire. I think it's a hire that, for one, I think Tennessee needed an offensive-minded coach. I think they needed a coach that knows the quarterback position, which Josh Heupel knows really well. Coach, you know, a guy like Sam Bradford, who went number one overall, but also last couple of years, the quarterbacks have played really well. Yeah, they haven't lived up to the hype of what they were, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, like you mentioned with Scott Frost. But I had a chance to call their bowl game versus BYU. And obviously they didn't put out a good showing. They lost their ball game, and BYU pretty crushed them in that ball game. But Dylan Gabriel, their quarterback, as a sophomore, the last 2 years has thrown for over 3,000 yards. He was only the third guy to do that behind like Dante Culpepper and Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles, right.
One of the two guys. So he's got the quarterback playing at a high level. They rushed for over 200 yards of ball game. So there's balance in this. There's a guy who's going to come in, who's going to make sure the offense runs the right way. And that's what you got to be to have in the SEC is a pretty good offense. And I think it all starts, like we mentioned earlier, with the QB, how much the QB means. And is Harrison Bailey the kid for him? Maybe, possibly, but I know Hype was going to recruit that position.
Let me ask you this, and I need your clarification on this. You'll know better than me. Can anybody transfer right now? Or is that over? Can you transfer without sitting a year right now?
Oh, no, it depends. I mean, obviously, if you go into the portal – you know, you got to have, you know, the waiver and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, depends on where you're going to. You're not going, you're staying outside the conference, then, you can play right away. But if you're trying to move inside the conference, that's a big deal. You got to wait.
Well, I know the folks in Tennessee are happy about Harrison Bailey, or they're excited about Harrison Bailey. I don't know what he's going to have around him now with everybody leaving, but, or if he even stays. But what do you think about what if Josh Heupel got the Gabriel from UCF to transfer?
That would be intriguing.
Because you said this was just his sophomore year, you're selling?
Yeah, his sophomore year. I mean, that would be intriguing if he was able to get him, because you got a guy who knows the system. He can obviously get the guys around him playing better, but a lot of it goes to, can you have spring? I mean, you need an offseason, especially with a new coach, everything going on with that program.
Yeah.
You got to find a way to get some continuity around it before the season comes around. Now, it's going to be tough sledding for a couple of years. And until he gets the style of players he wants in there, Tennessee's still going to be one of the bottom tier teams in the SEC East for sure going forward. So we'll see how much hype can get going, how much he can do going on. All right, stay tuned. In about 5-10 minutes, we got my man Ray Buchanan coming on. Going to talk a lot about his Falcon days, get drafted to the Colts, playing for Louisville, how he got the name Big Play Ray. All that's coming up in a minute. Before we get to him, obviously a lot of the other big news around the National Football League with some of the quarterbacks who are thinking about possibly moving on. Obviously, Matt Stafford is a guy who him and the organization decided to mutually part ways. So Matthew Stafford will have a new home. Deshaun Watson is another guy who is unhappy. Cam Newton, does he stay in New England, is another big story. But I think the biggest one of all is Deshaun Watson. Do you think Deshaun Watson moves on? Because he said, regardless of who they hire, his feelings haven't changed about not wanting to be in Houston. Do you think he moves on when his 2021 season starts for the Houston Texans?
I don't know. It's not his saying it like that. He can't just decide to move on. It's you know, the Texans got to get something for him. They got to get something worth what they feel that he's worth.
Right.
Now, I think sometimes the relationships have soured to a point to where you it's probably better that they just move on. If I had to guess, I think he's still in Houston. Mm. That's just because other teams are going to know they got Houston up against it. That they have leverage because Deshaun wants out so bad.
So you're saying they're going to run the check up on him, huh?
I don't know. Name another time. Well, Jalen Ramsey did it 2 years ago, didn't he? Yep. Where he kind of just
forced his way out.
I was going to say that I didn't think that happened too much in the NFL. I know it happens in the NBA a lot, but so I don't know, man. It'll be interesting.
Your franchise
to see.
Guy is not willing to cooperate. Like, yeah. Just think about it. What if, you know, he says, I don't want to come and doesn't show up. And now you waste all this time in offseason, training camps,
that's
OTAs,
true.
Mini camp, and you don't have your guy there. And think about it. You're going to have a new system. You have a new head coach. Like all that stuff. You need all that time on task. And you don't have your quarterback there. That's going to set you back even more. You know what I mean? So
can I change my answer? Because that is something that does happen in the NFL a lot is holding out. And I think in the NFL it's warranted because of guaranteed contracts. And in every other league, contracts are guaranteed, but in the NFL they're not. So I don't have a problem with people holding out when they're in the NFL. So yeah, maybe it will happen, man. Where's he going to go though?
I think the top two are obviously Miami and the Jets. He already said he wants to play for Saleh. He asked for them to.
That's crazy. First of all, who wants to go to the Jets? And why is he so hyped about playing for a defensive guy? You know what I mean?
Well, I think he just likes the style in which Saleh coaches. I think he's probably talked to a bunch of guys who've played for Saleh and San Fran. And I'm sure, obviously, he's going to bring an offensive guy that helps him. And then Miami, they got all the people around them. They got defensive guys. They got, you know, weapons on the outside. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Deshaun Watson. Stafford, a lot of people are saying, you know, he'd be good for Denver. He'd be good for Indianapolis. I mean, there are a couple teams that I think he would fit and have a chance to finally make the playoffs and have a chance to win some ball games. So there are a lot of things that are up in the air for some, I want to say, franchise guys around the National Football League, Scotty Day.
Yeah.
All right, man. My man Ray Buchanan will jump into the Triple Threat Pod. Coming up next, Big Play Ray joins the show. Welcome back to the Triple Threat Podcast. And I talked about it. I don't know how many times I got my main man, my dude, Ray Buchanan. Hold on. Let me take it again. My man, big time, big play, Ray Buchanan. I'm joining the Triple Threat Pod. Hey, Ray, but what's up, bro?
D-Sheezy, what's up with you, big dog?
Hey, man, what's first up, off, Shaq? Hey, man, appreciate you taking the time, man. I know you got a lot going on, but I appreciate you taking the time to holler at people because I know they would love to hear from Big Play Ray, the Chi-Town native. Talk a little bit about, obviously, he had a lot of thing going in. His career was a pretty good player at his time. And I learned a lot, man. I learned a lot when I did my little research. I thought I knew you, but, man, so much more than that we got to talk about. Before we even get into the NFL and all the stuff you did there, just talk about growing up in Chi-Town, what it was like, what you learned, you know, your upbringings, all that kind of stuff, and how Chi-Town made you to who you are today.
It's funny, man, talking about the Chi. You know, sometimes it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. And down here in Atlanta now, I can't get away from the Southern hospitality. but one thing about Chicago Shock I don't miss is that cold weather, dog.
Oh, man, I already know.
It's freezing down there. But growing up there, man, that's where it pretty much all started, man. I'll never forget driving home from Florida. My parents used to take us, you know, to a trip to Orlando every year. And yeah. My first ride home, I mean, from playing ball in the streets to where we just playing sandlot ball, Shock. And where it was like literally potholes in the grass, you know, out of bounds, dog, was Capris and Buicks. That was out of, that's when you knew you was out.
So, you hit the car, you out of bounds. Yeah.
You out of bounds, man. You know, so it was funny, man, playing sandlot football and playing dodgeball and learning juke moves from there and just learning from the streets. But yeah. On the way home from Florida, bro, it was like my older brother. You know, we was on our way home. He was talking about playing organized football. Now, he was a dog. Now, he was a beast. He actually played 5 years in the league himself at wide receiver, named Richard Buchanan out of Northwestern. But to make a long story short, coming home, and he was talking, he jumped out the car, and he was like, I'm going to play ball. I'm like, what kind of ball? You usually take me with you, big bro. He was like, no, you're not ready for this. So he took off and headed straight to the thing. I was right behind him. My mom was like, don't leave my son, boy, talking about my oldest brother. And so I ended up following him out there on the field, dog. And I was like, man, these dudes out here wearing helmets, and it's a lot of real cracking going on. I don't know nothing about all this. Yeah. And I was an offensive guy. So eventually they went on ahead and took me in, you know, at my grade level. And I think that was the first time that I ever felt pain, like that type of pain before. Because it's one thing playing sideline, sandlot football, and having Buicks and Capris.
Yeah.
But when you out there and you start, they breaking you off, and you first get hit by that helmet and shoulder pass for the first time, I was like, you know what? This might be the wrong sport for me, dog.
How old were you then?
I started, man, when I was 8 years old.
Yeah, man.
Eight years old.
I don't know. So a lot of people will watch this on YouTube. A lot of people will listen to it just audio-wise. But I don't know if people watching, if they can see Ray Boot. My dude Ray Boot, like he been in the gym. I see traps jumping out of here. Well, he looked like he been, you know, just came off the bench press. I mean, Ray Boot, what's up, man? I mean, you trying to get back into playing shape? What's going on? Or is this golf shape? What's this?
It's a little bit of golf shape. Got to continue my stretching and Pilates. But just, you know, I got four kids, man. I got three of my boys, man. And the funny part is, just in case one of them try me, I might have to go ahead and lay these guns on them.
Yeah, let them know how
real it is. So I try to stay in shape, no shock.
I hear you, man. That's good to hear, man. I'm glad to hear you're healthy. How's the family doing? Everybody doing well during this crazy pandemic time?
Yeah, you know, it's been crazy. It's been a crazy adjustment for everybody, man. Believe it or not, all my family's doing well. My kids are doing well. My oldest daughter down, you know, she's just got she's been married now for about 2 years and then had her first child, and Ray Jr., who's a baller, got released from the Falcons, you know, several years ago. He's down in Minnesota working for a heart medical device company. He has three kids and called one of the babies a COVID baby. I was like, you know what? Hey, COVID baby girl. So then Junior, Baylen, you know, he just finished transfer from Tennessee over to La Tech. So he got a one and done business trip. Yeah. And then my youngest boy, who I'm about to take to practice here shortly, he's at North Gwinnett. So they keeping me busy, bro.
That's crazy. You know, I just realized, like, two of Atlanta's favorite stars, and you and Jesse, both had sons that played at the same exact team that you played for. So that's pretty cool to have that, be able to go back and watch it come around full fold for you. But, man, let's go back into high school and when you think about making the decision to go to old Louisville. I'm not going to say Louisville because I know people go crazy. So, what went into the decision of going to Louisville out of high school?
No, it was funny. I was a track guy coming out of high school. I had about 35 track offers, man. A lot of people don't know that I almost took a track scholarship before I actually decided to play football. But
okay.
A guy by the name of Howard Snellenberger, man, came to my house, and I come from a military family. You know, so my dad really sat down with Howard Snellenberger at that time, and they really hit it off. And it was sort of my decision, but my, you know, it was one of those things that my dad was really a big intricate part in helping me make my decision to what school I was going to go to. So I had a lot of Big Ten, I had just about every Big Ten school that was there. And then here was Louisville, who was just right up the street. And it's kind of funny how that actually worked out. But I ended up making that decision to go there because they was going to allow me to run track and play football. So that's how I ended up, you know, selecting the University of Louisville at that particular time. But you got to remember, when I went to Louisville then, it was some dogs that was actually playing, but Howard Snellenberger was grabbing a lot of guys from Florida.
Yeah.
And the whole team was probably about 80% Florida. Then other than that, maybe 2% Midwest and a couple kids from here and there and coming from Kentucky. But we ended up putting Louisville on the map. And just to talk about how it actually started, though, DJ Shock, how my career sort of like boosted. Uh-huh. I was moved from corner to free safety. A lot of people don't know I played safety throughout my whole college career.
A lot of people don't remember you started at receiver, though. Started at receiver. They went to DB. Like, I don't think a lot of people know that either.
Facts, Shock. That's facts. Because, you know, it's funny. When I first got there, I didn't want to move to the defensive side of the ball. They lied to me, Shock, and I was ready to go home.
they told you was going to be to come there and play receiver. And then they got there, they said, guess what? Your money gonna be made on the other side.
They flipped it on me, Shock. I was like, man, I was like halfway home before my dad, you know, I called him up. By that time, you know.
You had left, bro? You left?
I left. You was out? And there wasn't no cell phones back then, so I had to pull over to the corner in that payphone. And like, dad, they lied, dad.
They told me I was gonna do this, yeah.
and what happened was, Shock, my dad said, you know what, you can come home, man, and work in this warehouse where I'm working, or work at this McDonald's, or you can go back and get your education, finish out, don't quit, because Buchanan's don't give up. So yeah. It was funny. I ended up turning around and I faced the facts that, you know, I was going to try my best to, you know, to make this transition. I ain't never backpedaled in my life. I ain't know nothing about backpedaling, cover nobody, man. And They turned around, man. They saw something in me. And literally, I took it on head on as a big challenge. You know, that's for those guys that's out there that get flipped around all the time and get lied to once they get to college. And sometimes these coaches know what they're talking about. And, you know what?
That's the thing I want to ask you about, because you think about the day, I mean, you going through with your kids. I mean, their kids in high school going to be listening to this, and, you know, they tell them, hey, you're going to go to college, you can play this, and then it doesn't work out the way you want it to be. Whether it's either you go on and say you think you're going to start and you don't start, but you go there and you have to change position. What did you have to do mentally to get into that mindset of, okay, well, I'm not doing what I thought I was going to do, but now I'm doing something else? How did you overcome that obstacle in your life to say, all right, I'm going to make the best of this and get better?
You know what? I think it was that drive within inside of me that wanted to compete and wanted to be the best anyway. I took it on as a challenge instead of making so much of an excuse to try to be the best. So what I did was I started watching the guys in front of me that were pretty good at it. I mean, mm-hmm. It was some guys that was moving their feet that was pretty good. Not only that, you know, it's one thing about putting the right things into your body at that particular time and then making the transition from the skill set.
Right.
But then it was the IQ part of it, Shock. I mean, the study and preparation for it, you know, literally I took it to a whole different level. Not only did I just study these guys and what I was actually seeing, I was actually looking at tape. I was like, all right, if I want to play this position, let me go and find some of the greatest players that ever played this position and start looking at tape. I had pulled that coach over to the side, my defensive back coach. I said, all right, if I'm going to do this, how can I do it? And he started pulling out tape. You know, I start watching how prime time, I'm talking about in pros, Amelius Williams, Dale Greens, Rod Woodson. I mean, all these NFL greats, and he was putting on. I was like, wow, I want to do that. How can I do it? So I started grinding, putting my teeth down. And then not only that, you know, I played offense, and then I wanted to learn how to hit and tackle. By that time, you know, back in the day, it was like blowing snot bubbles. So I did learn how to lower my helmet and probably would have I would have been out of the game so many different times for the way we used to play. But Shock,
you'd have been fined and all kind of stuff. Man, you know what's crazy? You talk about moving from receiver to defensive back, never having backpedaled in your career till your sophomore year, you had 3 picks. And then in 91, y'all go play Alabama in the Fiesta Bowl and you the defensive MVP. I mean, you go from a guy who wasn't really what you thought it was going to be And then you become the MVP of the Alabama game where you guys whooped them 34-7. You ended, you know, with 108 tackles and 8 interceptions, Ray. But I couldn't believe that when I saw it. I said, my dude was balling. Talk about how you made that transition. And then once you finally made that transition to how you became big play Ray, because that came along in college, right? I mean, how did that how did that big play Ray name come about?
Well, I tell you what, man, I was, you know, one, I already talked about the skill set, but I did play offense, and I used to hate when they say, you know, they move bad wide receivers with no hands to defensive back. They used to say it all the time.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had the skill set to actually do it. I mean, I took it on as a challenge, and I was always around the football. So I always started to make plays. And when I was one of those guys, when they started to come up with that name big play in college, it was crazy. I was one of those guys that wanted to make a tackle look good right afterwards. Mm. I wanted to make an interception or a pass breakup look good. I played with so much energy. I wanted to be on the offensive side of the ball. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. Howard Snellenberger told me when he recruited me, he said, you wanted the damn ball so bad, son, to play on the offensive side of the ball. If you from Chicago like you say you are, why don't you get out there and steal the ball? I was like, what? Steal the ball? What you talking about? He said, be a thief then. He said, you from, and he talked to me just like that. He said, you from the hood. You know what it's like. Don't act like you ain't stole no candy or nothing like that in the store or something like that. Get out there and steal the ball.
Pulling your card. Pulling your card. Like, I already know.
I was like, what? All right, cool. So I started to, you know, be a thievery. You know, I started thinking about getting out there trying to snatch the ball anywhere I can. And my career started to build. So I ended up being All-American my junior and senior year. And things just started to happen for me. And but believe it or not, when I was getting drafted, coming out of Louisville, I wanted to play corner so bad. So I dropped all of this weight, and I wanted to show them that I could run. But I had no film at playing the position. But the late Eugene Parker, eventually with who I chose as my agent at that particular time, and he had some good guys, and he had me around prime a lot during that particular time. And I was able to get well-groomed, and he was telling me that I should be able to play the position. But that's how it all started, coming out of Louisville and then getting drafted by the Indianapolis Colts in 1993.
Man. Yeah. Talk about that experience, man. Obviously, being drafted is a huge honor. Being drafted to the Colts in the third round, 65th overall. First kind of mindset of, oh, I'm going to the National Football League. I'm going to play for the Colts. What were you thinking about when you first getting, you know, drafted to go to the league? What was that experience like for you?
It was funny, man. Believe it or not, I was here, Shaq. I was in Atlanta. Yeah, at that particular time, they took half of the guys that were supposed to go in the first round to New York, and then half of them was here in Atlanta, the place called Frankie Sports Bar back in the day. And believe it or not, I was supposed to go in the first round. I was projected to go in the first round. It didn't happen because there was a lot of offensive linemen that year. It was a lot of good safeties, a lot of good DBs that actually went. So I fell to the first round, but the experience was great. To be honest with you, I got picked up by the Rams, and then it was traded. My pick was traded to the Colts. And I almost went to the same school. At that time, my brother, my older brother, was playing with the Rams. I got kind of excited when I first found out, when I got the phone call. And then found out. Yeah, I thought we would be playing together. I was like, because me and my brother, we competed at everything.
Believe
it or not, Shaq, I couldn't wait to try to hit that dude in his mouth because we talked so much.
I already know. Yeah.
So we only faced off. We did only face off once, and that was in the preseason game. But to make a long story short, man, you know, it was a blessing getting drafted. But I just didn't get – I wasn't satisfied, Shaq. I ain't going to lie. You know, I did have something to prove. I wanted to be the best at the position. And then, you know, believe it or not, I took advantage of it. You know, so a lot of times, you know, a lot of kids talk about, you know, being moved from different position. No matter what, when you get out there on the football field, you gotta give everything that you got, because you're not only playing for yourself, you're playing for all the other guys that you're playing with. And I took it on as a passion in that way.
Man, it's crazy, because I remember watching you. I remember watching your swag, you know, I was like, man, look at this DB out here. He got all this flavor about him, got all this flag about him. And then I go back, I look at the numbers in your years with the Colts. You had 16 interceptions in 4 seasons. I mean, it's dudes now who played 4 or 5 years who never get interceptions. You had 16 in your 4 seasons with the Colts. And then you get traded to go to the Falcons. And what was that like? I mean, going to Atlanta, knew you wanted to be here, but over the next seven seasons, my man Big Play had 30 interceptions over the next seven seasons. Talk about that time in Atlanta, because I know there's a I'm going to ask you about the Super Bowl in a minute, but just talk about when you first got to Atlanta, what the expectations were. And obviously, I seen all the videos and all the stuff. You guys had characters on them, on those teams. But just talk about the experience once you first got to Atlanta.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know, you know, Shock, it was called a transition tag. That's when, you know, they had the franchise tag, you had the transition tag, or right. You can be a total free agent. And, you know, honestly, I didn't even know I was going to be in Atlanta. This is the crazy part. A lot of people don't know that. So at that particular time, a transition tag, for those of you who don't know, I was able to go out and shop for the best offer. And then the Indianapolis Colts, who's the team that I was with, had the first right of refusal to match it. So I went out there, you know, just looking for the money more than anything, just to go let them know what my worth was. Right. And, you know, I was shocked that the Colts didn't want to do my deal anyway because of the numbers I was actually putting up. But it was a business, and I understood that. So what happened was I brought the contract back to the Indianapolis Colts. My agent did. And then they told me that it was too much. They could not afford me. So the team that I had selected, you know, was the Atlanta Falcons. I had no idea. I was like, whoa, I didn't plan on being a Falcon or anything like that. But it just happened to happen. So yeah. I was like, all right, I got here and the Falcons wasn't doing too well. I'll be honest with you. I think that the virus hit the team a long time ago, and that's how bad they were losing.
It was bad, bro. He said the virus hit way back then.
it was like Saving Private Ryan around that. It wasn't the best of shape when Dan Reeves brought me in, but he had a vision. Dan Reeves brought me in. He brought in a bunch of other different players too. Half of the team was just you know, totally new, and so that year. We started out 1-8. It was like amazing and kind of tough when I first got here in 97. Mm-hmm. But from then on, you know, it was a guy by the name of Rich Brooks, who was my defense coordinator at that time. He said, I wasn't even playing up to par. And he was like, you know what, Ray, we brought you in here. And, you know, it's not just that we paid you a lot of money, but we also brought you here because we like your energy. We wanted that type of energy to spread. And we got a lot of good talent here, and I need you to start playing up the par. So I looked in the mirror myself and what I can step up within myself. And then we had a team meeting, you know, all the team leaders, Jamal Anderson at that time, Bob Whitfield, Chuck Smith, you know, Eugene Robinson. We had a bunch of guys that were leaders of that team. And we stood up, and then, you know, everybody started playing up the par, to be honest with you. We went on like a seven-game run. When we ended up going 7-9 or something like that. Yeah. And then we didn't lose the very next year going back into that season. It went on a straight run of 14-2. And that's leading up to what you was going to be talking about with the Super Bowl. But, you know, me being who I was, doing my part, you know, trying to be a pickoff specialist, trying to make big plays. It was contagious. We had a lot of guys that actually playing their part. And when you get a lot of guys that play their part, you can have a lot of different characters, a lot of different faiths, a lot of different colors, man. But it was one thing we started to learn. We started playing together and gelling at the right time and not having the injuries that would plague the football team at the right time. So we had a good run at that particular time, Shock.
99 obviously is a big year. If you're an Atlanta Falcons fan or you just a fan of football player, I think a lot of people know about that year, 99. You talked about it. You guys went 14-2, went to the Super Bowl. But I want to talk about before you went to the Super Bowl, you guys played against San Fran, who had Rice and T.O. Obviously, Steve Young was the quarterback. Then you turn around, you play the Vikings, who were 15-1. They were beating everybody by 20-plus at home. And they got Moss, they got Chris Carter, they got Randall Cunningham. Talk about those battles that you had with those dudes. Like, everybody look at Jerry Rice and say, yeah, he's a GOAT. Everybody look at Randy Moss. Everybody look at T.O., Chris Carter. I mean, but you lined up against these dudes. What was it like lined up against those dudes and playing 60, 65 plays and playing man, lockdown, in their face type of coverage with
them? Man, Shock, I'll tell you what. I was having nightmares, and then I was also being excited at the same time, man. I mean, it was so emotional. It was just an emotional roller coaster. Here you are having an opportunity to go up against the GOAT. It wasn't my first time going up against Jerry, but whenever we played against him, I had the lineup on him. And if it switched and T.O. started to be that dog during that game, I would have to go cover him. I mean, whenever I had to prepare for these guys, not only did I have to literally think about, you know what, these are the best that the guys, I mean, it speaks for themselves. These are Hall of Fame guys. it was like, I can't express how much energy it actually took for me to actually start preparing for these guys because they were good, but I just knew how good I was too. And, you know, I say, if I go out there and win my fair share of the battles, then it's a good day for me. And that's right. What I end up going out to do. I'm going to let you know, Shaq, I gave them hell. They knew it. They knew whenever I stepped on the field, they was having the same thing. After talking to these boys later, they were having the same thing about me. So they knew it was going to be some battles out there. But to make a long story short, when it came to it, I embraced it. It was fun. You know, going up against Randy Moss in the NFC Championship game, I knew he wasn't running across the middle. I knew he was running short. I mean, I knew he was going deep. So I was like, you know what? You can have these little short passes all day. That's not going to beat us. But I'm going to give you that. But I ain't going to sit up here and look at film and watch the horror flicks. It looked like it was a horror movie watching all of the tapes that Randy Moss was killing through that year.
Right.
I mean, he set the league on fire. And I was like, all right, it's all deep balls. So I wanted to take away the deep ball. But, you know, going against Chris Carter, and that game, again, in the NFC Championship game, beating San Fran, turning around and beating Minnesota, then we happened to face the Denver Broncos, and I embraced that one too because I lined up on the top receivers every game. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, sometimes we would I would guard the opposite receiver. Like say, for instance, if it was Chris Carter, mm-hmm. I'd take Chris Carter and we'd double Randy Moss. Or we'd flip it and I'd cover Randy Moss and we'd just free up and just play regular. Gotcha. But, you know, these guys were dog shot. I mean, I'm going to let you know right now, even though we won those games and we took Atlanta to a whole different level on a plateau that was built in us, everybody played and did their part. I mean, we ran the ball well. I mean, we played good defense and stopping the run. I mean, we turned over the football. I mean, we did everything that was asked of us at the right time, and that's how we were able to gel and succeed. And it's kind of hard, man. That's why I respect the game so much, to gel at the right time. And you know, so we had good coaches, man, and good players.
Ray, what kind of from a corner standpoint, when you turn on the tape and you watching a Rice, you watching a T.O., you watching a Randy Moss, what are some of the things that you looked at to get yourself prepared and ready to go? Because I think a lot of people would say, how does a guy play against somebody like that and be successful? Like, what are some of the things that you had to do to get yourself prepared for those big time, you know, one-on-one matchups in the ballgame?
Well, you knew how athletic they were. I mean, I knew just about every route that they were going to run when they sort of like lined up. I had a photographic memory just by studying tape. I sort of had to play the game of looking at alignment and looking at the plays. So if I saw a certain set, I knew the top three routes that actually came out of those plays, which sort of like helped me out. Then, of course, they had tape on me as well. So so I had to switch it up. I mean, sometimes I was getting up in their face and I would press them. Sometimes I was playing a technique which we call press bail. Yeah. So then sometimes I was playing off, and I was probably at that particular time during my era one of the best off players that played the game because the quarterback was sort of up under the snap a lot, and I used to be able to read a 3-step, 5-step, and 7-step drop. So it added to the attributes by me switching everything around, and that's what sort of made myself up. But the key was not just playing, you know, studying the tape. I also had to play against the quarterback and try to play games with mind games with you guys, because you guys will look and y'all will see what kind of coverage we are. When you
Ray Boo, let me tell you something. They told us from day one as QB, they said, guess what? Corners lie. That's what they told us point blank. Corners lie. They never gonna be where they look at pre-snap. So that corner out there standing 6-7 yards off, snap of the football, he's not going to be at 6-7 yards. So that's the number one thing that we learn as quarterbacks is you do lie. So we can't look at what y'all doing to try to figure out what coverage it is.
that's fact shot. Everything you see, man, was like a ghost move for everything.
No doubt. Who was the toughest guy to cover during your time? Because obviously, I mean, we just mentioned those four, but there were tons of other dudes that you played against. Who was the toughest guy, I would say, technically, that you had to face throughout your career?
Terrence Mathis will get mad at me if I don't at least mention his name. But I tell you what, it was, you know, when I was playing with the Colts, Marvin Harrison, I was having to practice up against that dude. And I knew what he was going to deliver, you know, once I even went to another team, and hopefully I never really have to see him that much, but only a couple of times. But he used to get fit. Those guys that actually were fast, Yeah. It wasn't so much of the big guys as much. You know, the big guys would throw you around, you know, like the T.O.'s, the Randy Moss, the Chris Carters, the Michael Irvins of that group. But then you start having to ship your guys, you know, the Isaac Bruces, the Terry Holtz. Mm. I mean, you had the Marvin Harrisons. So I can just go. It was the Jimmy Smiths. The list can go on. I mean, it go on and on. And each week it was like, dang, you don't even get a breather.
Here come another dude.
So they all had their own different attributes. And sometimes, you know, some guys I'd be like, you know what? I'm gonna play this guy. I'm gonna play him in a way where I can be a little bit more aggressive. This one I have to be a little bit more passive because they got better blocking protection. This quarterback right here, you know, he can look off and throw the ball. It was so many different things that played into effect. So if I have to answer that shot, you know, if I had to just pick one, if I did have to pick one out of all of those guys, man, I'm gonna be honest with you. It would have been Isaac Bruce. Man, that dude used to have some battles, dog. I ain't gonna lie. I mean, it just wasn't fair. I hated when they had Max Patek. It's like they had Max Patek, bro.
He got all day.
And two-man routes, and they running post-corner posters all day. It wasn't fair. I was mad. Yeah. Our defensive line wasn't getting to that quarterback, dog. I'm like, man, I ain't got time to be out here. I can give you three. I can give you two sometimes, but if they out there 4, 5, 6, 7 seconds, oh man, you can forget about it. These boys was eating.
So we talked about San Fran, talked about obviously the Vikings, and then you get the Super Bowl 33, and all the talk of Super Bowl 33 is Ray Boo and old Shannon Sharp. All the conversation, y'all going back and forth. Bro, talk about how that guy started, because you called him ugly, you called him Mr. Ed. He said you had on eyeliner and lipstick, and that's just what he heard. Like, I mean, that's what y'all went back and forth throughout the entire time. What was that? Yeah. What was that like? What was that about? Like, was it fun, or was you like dead serious with it?
No, man. See, a lot of people didn't know me and Shannon. We still cool to this day, man. That's my dog. That's my dog. And it's so funny. Back then, you know, they call it Joni, cracking jokes. And you know how it was just getting on the plane. You know, if you get on the plane, sometimes shocking, you know, they was just cracking jokes on your suits. You know, you're walking through and trying to see what kind of suits you got
on. That's normal everyday Joni right there.
Exactly. So we took it to a whole different level. It was 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. We got tired of talking about football. And how it really all started was Shannon was talking about Eugene Robinson, the safety, and Will White. You know, he was talking about both of our safeties, and they were talking about would they be able to cover him.
Right.
And he was getting on them, and he called them. How you gonna have Moses and Elijah from the Bible trying to cover me.
Golly.
And they was not fighting back. And I mean, Eugene was saying nothing. So I was like, you know what, man? I'm gonna hit up Shannon. We're gonna turn this up Jonas session. So I would joke on Shannon. He would turn around the next day, he'd joke on me. Yeah. And it was we was going back and forth. A lot of people thought we had bad blood, and then they sort of tried to make it seem like I was sort of like the bad guy in the end because I ended up making a hit on him during the game. Yeah. And it hurt his knee. And then they was like, they don't like each other. He won the game, but I got the last laugh. And they was just trying to, you know how the media is.
No doubt.
They not knowing back then, and not knowing that me and him were best friends. And we sitting here at the Pro Bowl sitting together, and we having a big Jonas session. Now we sitting at the Pro Bowl, and we sitting at the cabana, and we got everybody joining in and cracking on everybody. So,
that's my dude, man. That's cool, though, because I think a lot of people don't understand, like, this happens every day in the locker room, no matter who it is, what you got going on. It's just how it go down in the NFL locker room. Ray, before we let you get out of here, man, I know you got some things to do, but I want you to obviously let people know what you got going on, talk about your family, talk about your boys and your daughter. What do the grandkids call you? You know, what else is Ray Boo doing these days, and how the family doing?
Well, family doing well, man. You know, what I'm doing is training my boys right now. One is a wide receiver, and the other one I just finished telling you about, Baylen, he's heading out to La Tech this upcoming year. So I've been taking the time and training them. You know, they train out of a facility called DSA Training down here in Atlanta.
Right.
One of the best training facilities around, but you know, so that's besides doing that, playing golf, man, and taking care of my kids and grandkids. Yeah. So I have 4 grandkids now, 2 boys and 2 girls, and they call me Poppy. That's my name. They call me Poppy, dog. And I used to talk about those parents, Shocker. I used to talk about them grandparents, man. They were young. They didn't even reach 50 yet. And now I'm one of them.
Now you one of them. They don't call you Big Play no more. They call you Poppy.
Exactly, dog.
Ray Boo, last thing. Who was the best teammate you had? I'm sure there were two or three. Who were the guys that were the biggest characters throughout your career?
Man, we had a bunch of characters, man. I mean, Bob Whitfield is a funny character. That dude is the funniest, one of the funniest dudes ever known to man. Jamal Anderson, that dude was a total character. Chuck Smith was a character. I mean, Eugene Robinson was a character. I mean, it was a bunch of guys, man. I mean, we got along so well, man. I can't really point and say, okay, it was going to be one of those guys, man. I mean, even when Peerless Price even jumped in the scene, later on, but I had a lot of good relationships. Chuck Smith, Terrence Mathis, Tony Martin. I can go down the list, man.
Cool.
I don't want to just name one.
I feel you. Cause then the boys be like, oh, you ain't hollering, tell your boy. I feel you. But
I got you, Shock. You right now, you the number one on the list, dog. You called me. Me and you, dog. Let's get on that golf course. What we gonna do?
You my dog, man. Hey man, we appreciate you joining us here on the Triple Threat Pod, man. Taking a little time. Reminiscing a little bit for us. I know a lot of fans really get a kick out of hearing some of the stories and hear some of the stuff you had to overcome from wide receiver to two-time Pro Bowl All-American. I mean, I did it all. I mean, you got 30 interceptions in that while he's with the Falcons, another one with Oakland, and finished that career with 47 interceptions, man. Big props to you on a great career, man. Appreciate you taking the time here on the Triple Threat Podcast. For my man, Big Play Ray, better known as Big Poppy Buchanan. I'll let you, bro. Appreciate you.
Mike, I appreciate you, Shock. Appreciate you, dog. One. All right, Ray.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.